They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. We're back to our regularly scheduled programming. We had 2 weeks of special episodes talking about 2024 and then talking about the 90s. Elliot, I didn't tell you that I was going to do this, but I heard that you were considering quitting the podcast altogether based on my decision to veto Jurassic Park in that episode.
I cannot confirm or deny reports of internal discussions that were held before the actual episode. There were talks about options were reviewed, is what I'll say. Options were reviewed, but, well, you listened to the episode. We all know what happened, so I don't think there's any reason to...
We're currently doing another episode, so clearly.
Well, I don't think there's any reason to relitigate it. I think can just let the past lie where it may.
Yeah. I just thought that was funny that I learned that from our parents or on the weekend.
Always whistleblowers. Well, they'll be dealt with, believe you me. Anyway, Nathan, I've got a question for you. This is one of those fun movie questions that I sometimes have. Is that something that I do? I don't think actually.
You have done that a couple times because you asked me what I thought about, like, Wicked having people sing during it. We've had some discussions of just, like, movie questions.
Okay. Well, then, continuing in that apparent tradition. So, obviously, there's a lot of discussion about Hollywood these days. Not much of it positive. And there's a lot of nostalgia for the good old days. The 90s, the 80s, the decades that we are working through. And I'm really interested, and this is kind of an imperfect audience for this, because I know that you are not that kind of person, but I'm always interested in, like, what exactly do these people think the rate of, like, good or great or all-timer movies was in the 90s? Because some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes in the making of our lists is I watch a lot of remedial movies from those eras to, like, try to see if there are any ones that I want to add to my list, or if I need to flesh out my list. And I would say, just from this certainly unscientific but personal experience, that the general quality of movies seems to be pretty consistent, at least from the 2020s back to the 1980s. But I mean, what do you think? Do you think that are movies worse now than they used to be? Do you think that there used to be a higher clip of, like, all-timers being produced? And if so, when?
I think there's definitely some years that have, a higher percentage of really good movies, or just a higher number of those movies. But I think it's impossible to, like, compare, in my opinion, 2023 with 1993, because I wasn't alive during 1993. So, like, if there was some indie movie that didn't get much traction, that never really entered the public discourse and now doesn't really show up on lists, it's impossible for me to find that movie compared to 2023, right? Where some of my favorite movies, well, even take this year, that like Flow made my top five movies of the year list. I'd be really surprised if Flow ends up making like a best of the decade list. I'd be really surprised. I mean, Flow most likely is not going to be nominated for very much of anything. So the odds of Flow becoming a movie that are just is just kind of lost to the annals of time is very high. So then people who come back to 2023 or 2024 in this case to like watch the best of the movies, I mean, they're going to watch probably stuff like The Substance, The Brutalist, Anora, Conclave, Doom Part 2 maybe. Or if they're doing like the top 10, they'll do, right, like 19 sequels of terribles like Kung Fu Panda 4, Inside Out 2, and they're going to say, oh, it looks like 2024 kind of sucked. And it's like, well, yeah, if you weren't here, if you weren't looking for stuff. So that's why I think it's always impossible to judge based on years. And I'm much more, like, I don't really love discourse that's just complaining about the state of things. That doesn't feel very productive to me. I'm much more interested in, like, I would much rather have someone come up to me and say, hey, here's some hidden gems that I saw last year that were really good, than someone come up and say, like, hey, weren't the top 10 box office winners kind of sucky last year? I'd be like, yeah, like, they usually are, but you're not helpful.
Well, I mean, I certainly see that. I do have an interest in, like, the meta, I guess you could say, or the high-level discourse about movies, what they've done, what they're doing, and how people respond to them. I think that there is worth to be had, there is profit to be had in a discussion of that type. I would probably agree with you. Well, I don't know. That was a lot of hedging. I think that you're, that's a joke, by the way. I think that you're right. Mostly. I feel like Hollywood has always trended towards safe slop, right? Like, yeah, a lot of Marvel movies or like franchise movies that are being made these days are slop. But when you look at, like, I mean, they're no more or less slop than, right, your average Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone slop action movie, right? That they're all generic, they're all the same thing.
Yeah.
They're all pretty low quality. So I don't think that anything has changed particularly.
No. Well, and I think, again, if you want any sort of positive sign, I mentioned this factoid a couple of times last year just because I thought it was really fascinating, but Oppenheimer was the first Best Picture winner since Return of the King to also be in the top 10 highest grossing movies of the year, which I think if you're looking for positive signs in terms of like a mainstream audience is being attracted to stuff that's also receiving critical acclaim and like there's a widespread appreciation for a film beyond just like, again, to go back to Flow and be like, yeah, Flow didn't make any money. I'm not seeing it on a ton of lists and stuff. So it's not a movie where you're like, yeah, everyone's behind this thing. But Oppenheimer is certainly an example of a movie that received widespread acclaim in the same way that, you know, something like Rocky or Titanic or even like Dances with Wolves achieved, you know, it made a ton of money and it won Best Picture and was very popular amongst people.
Well, I wouldn't worry about it either way. I mean, it's interesting to have those discussions, but I wouldn't let the top 10 box office cause you any consternation. I mean, just there is always, and always will be good movies being made. Just got to seek them out.
Amen.
And they may not, in fact, probably won't be on the top 10. which is why you're going to have to do a little digging.
Well, or let Magellan's at the Movies do the digging for you, and just listen to our recommendation. We're smart people. We know what we're talking about.
Exactly.
Anyway, let's get to this episode, Elliot. That was an interesting question. I always love talking about movies. That's why I do this thing. But let's talk about a specific movie here. You picked Ridley Scott's Alien. We already did Alien Romulus, so we have some high-level thoughts about the franchise, but now we're going a little bit deeper, and hopefully maybe talking about one that we like a little bit more. So, Elliot, you know, tell the audience what they need to know about Alien, and maybe let's open up this discussion.
All right. Well, if you didn't know, which is a little unlikely because this is a pretty significant franchise, Alien came out in 1979, didn't even need to look it up. Directed by Ridley Scott. And it tells the story of a crew of humans in the far future on a cargo ship, pretty much like a cargo ship today, of just industrial, who pick up a distress signal or some kind of signal. They follow it to a planet. They discover an alien craft, and in there, therein, they discover alien life. Quite hostile alien life. It's a very unpleasant looking insectoid thing that hugs your face and basically impregnates you with, I don't know, like a parasite maybe? Maybe an egg? Not 100% sure. Doesn't really matter. But anyway, eventually that... So this happens to a character, they're taken back on the ship, eventually the alien bursts out of his chest, famous scene, and now the game is on, essentially. They need to find and destroy this incredibly dangerous, hostile alien creature called a xenomorph, and basically survive. So that's the plot synopsis of the movie. This was very, very successful. Not particularly well received initially, but like with a few Ridley Scott movies, it had a very strong reevaluation and became eventually a science fiction classic. The science fiction classic that we enjoy today, and it spawned a whole franchise of movies of varying quality, but... And we'll talk a little bit about the franchise at the end. But for now, we're focusing on this movie, where it all started. Nathan, I'm going to flip it over to you for your history with this movie, as well as your opening thoughts. And then I'll do the same.
Yeah, this is only the second time I've seen this movie. I've seen every Alien movie only once. I've watched through all of the franchise except for one, if you want to count the Alien versus Predator movies, which apparently 20th Century Fox does, because in their announcement for Alien Romulus, they called it the ninth Alien movie, which is only a number you can get to if you count both Alien versus Predators. But this was my second time watching Alien. I enjoyed it a fair amount when I first saw it, but I was a bit more of an Aliens guy, to be honest, that I enjoyed Aliens a little bit more just because it was more action heavy. I felt like it had a stronger visual sort of style. I liked the characters a little bit more, and so going back to this one, I was interested to see if my opinion would change, and I'm happy to report, because I always love reporting things like this, that it did change very positively. And actually this, I don't want to spoil my ranking, but Alien might have jumped a little bit in the rankings. Because I really, really enjoyed this. I thought the characters were really fantastic. I thought the structure of the story was really interesting. And I thought, much like Ridley Scott's other science fiction classic, Blade Runner, I think the world building and just the granular sense of everything in the frame being like a real device or a real thing that this future is using, I thought it was so, so strong, and it made for such an engaging watch that had so much realism to it, despite this being, yeah, an alien trying to kill people on a spaceship. It felt like something that was real and really happening. So I really enjoyed this, and I'm excited to talk about it more here in this episode.
Wow. Well, that makes me really happy, because I'm in the exact same boat. Well, I always preferred Alien to Aliens, as I've mentioned a few times on the podcast. And yeah, at this time around, I thought that its glory was undimmed. I thought it was really, really good. It nailed the tone, the atmosphere. I also really liked the characters. It had a fantastic monster at its center. Its visual language, I think, was spot on. And I had a few just little issues with certain characters and a little bit of confusion about some motivations, but we'll get into that later. I think the headline here is that this gets a Emma Jones at the movies thumbs up. So great job, Alien. I want to start really high level, really zoomed out, because if you do any research on Alien, like I did at 10 o'clock last night, you will quickly find that there is a significant body of work dedicated to essentially explaining its rich thematic content. And a lot of this comes down to the distinctive look of this film in the alien sections, that is. So, like, all of the alien stuff and the xenomorph itself are all the work of H.R. Giger. Nathan, are you familiar with this artist?
Yeah, I'm familiar with him being the guy who designed the xenomorph.
Okay, but you haven't, like, explored his work?
No.
Okay, well, I have just a little bit, but to give you the skinny, H.R. Giger is a Swedish artist who is most well known for, well, I'd say two things. His art typically envisions biomechanics, a fusion of biology and technology, and also, how should I put this delicately? Let's say reproductive concerns.
Okay.
Basically, he's very interested in, like, the mechanical, biological process of sex and reproduction. So there's a lot of sexual imagery in his art. Not be too indelicate, the xenomorph's head has a pretty distinctive shape to it that certainly evokes some anatomy. And a lot of this, the reason I'm talking about this is because it is felt that a lot of this kind of trickles down into the movies themselves, that they're about, like, the horrors and the almost violence of childbirth and reproduction and motherhood. Quite a lot of it. I would struggle to summarize it, but basically what I'm asking is, do you see any of that in the movie? Like, are you getting at much of a, I don't know, subtext about that or anything else, really?
I certainly can see it, and I'm familiar with a lot of the things that you're talking about, that obviously the facehugger, right, puts its spawn into a person, and then the process by which that spawn emerges from the person is a very it's a process that kills the host. And I've certainly seen discussions where they're talking about what this sort of calls to mind, what sorts of things this creates in the viewer, or what sort of things this calls to mind in the viewer. For me personally, I don't think it does a ton, because it feels like you're having to read a lot into something in a movie that kind of boils down to big alien kills people. And certainly, the movie is leveraging other things to make the alien scarier, to make the alien more alien, more, you know, foreign, and therefore scary and unknown to you, the audience. But I don't know. We go to, this is a bit of a tangent, but I've gone to twice now this like pop culture and academia conference where people come and do presentations on like papers that they're doing about pop culture stuff. So it's academic, but it's about, like, Lord of the Rings and things like that. And I would say that analysis of this movie, where they're like, oh, it's about reproduction and it's about the horrors of childbirth, feels very similar to me to some of these papers that I see, where I'm like, I guess you can do that. Like, there's nothing stopping you, because death of an author and everything, and especially if the author, I would say, is putting in some of that stuff. But for me, it doesn't do a lot to improve my enjoyment of the movie. One of the, as an example, I did go to one panel that talked about Twilight being like a metaphor for communism or something, or like a metaphor for Marx's critique of capitalism, which I was like, yeah, I guess, like, you know, when you abstract everything all the way to being like meaningless ideas, you can't successfully make any movie about anything. And I'm not saying that's what's happening here, but I am saying that it's getting a bit too abstract for me, and much less about like what's actually happening in the movie and how that's actually making you feel.
Well, I would agree. I think that's well put. It doesn't really do anything for me. It certainly doesn't detract from the movie.
No.
And obviously if people are seeing this, I say more power to them. But I myself, yeah, I would just echo, what you said. I think that it certainly, to me at least, and maybe I'm just stupid, maybe I'm just missing it. But to my little pea brain, it requires a bit too much extrapolation, to the point that if I were trying to, like, construct the movie as an extended metaphor for birth or motherhood or whatever, it would be taking me out of the movie. But yeah, so let's go ahead and zoom in a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about our main cast, because I think that this movie pulls off something pretty impressive from a writing point of view, and that's that we don't really have a main character until like an hour into the film. Mm-hmm. Arguably, Dallas, the captain of the ship, is kind of the main character, but I would argue that for at least like the opening of the movie, the first portion, about until the chestburster scene, the ensemble is kind of the main character. And I think it just works. I think that that's a lot down to the naturalistic performances and dialogue. That Ridley Scott famously said that his vision for this crew was truck drivers in space. And I think that it's absolutely been nailed here, that these are all blue-collar working people. Even with the addition of recognizable stars like Sigourney Weaver and to a lesser extent Ian Holm, I don't think that any of them really look like movie stars.
Yeah.
They're dirty, their clothes are rumpled and clearly lived in. The ship, Dude, the ship looks fantastic. Like, hats off to the set designers and the dressers. All of them did a great job at making this thing look just so, I don't know, it just looks so grungy and industrial. It looks exactly like you would imagine some kind of refinery plant if it was mobile, if it was astronomical. So that really serves, I think, to ground you in these characters and in their lives, because of course I think that general audiences will have an easier time of connecting with a working man, an everyday Joe like themselves, like you and me, Nathan. We're basically truck drivers in our day-to-day lives. But yeah, I think that they're all really charming. They all have their own quirks. And the movie very quickly sets up their relationships that I'm going to struggle with names here. But I think Parker and Brett are like the engineers. Yep. Dallas is the captain. Ash is the science officer. But I'm just naming roles. The point is that their relationships are well defined. Parker and Brett, they're clearly friends. Ripley kind of had the eventual main character, played by Sigourney Weaver, kind of has a frostier relationship with everyone. She's a lot more, I guess, logical, or maybe a little bit, I don't know, she's more pragmatic, more prosaic. Yeah. I just think it's really well done. And to have to go so long without like a central, without a single anchor point, but being anchored in all of them at once and collectively, I think is probably one of the movie's biggest strengths, in my opinion.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that might really surprise you if you go back and watch Alien, is the fact that, yeah, Ripley is not really the main character for the bulk of the movie. She's only the main character when she becomes it by process of everyone else dying. And yeah, the characters, like you said, feel very real, feel like they have very real relationships with each other, that they're concerned about normal human things, right? That Parker and Brett want to make sure that they're going to get paid, that everything's going to be okay. I would say it's kind of a nitpick, but I do think the other woman on board, whose name I'm struggling to remember, I think she kind of feels like she's just kind of there, as opposed to everyone else who it feels like has a really defined role and purpose on the ship, and they're going and, right, carrying out that role as the movie progresses. But yeah, the movie does a really great job of characterizing each of these people and then giving all of them, I think there's just a lot of great little character moments, like Dallas when he's consulting Mother about his chances, that there's...
Oh, that's great. I really like that.
Yeah, it's just a great scene where he seems to be kind of aware that he's a little bit screwed here and that he's maybe likely to die. And the movie... Again, it's great because the movie doesn't really, like, try to... he doesn't break down into tears or something, but there's just a moment where he's sitting there after the computer keeps telling him, like, oh, I don't know your odds. I don't know. Like, I'm useless. And, you know, it just kind of lingers on him a little bit. I also really liked how Parker got noted... Like, the woman who survives until the end gets noticeably more and more frantic as the movie...
Lambert is her name.
Lambert, thank you. Lambert gets more and more frantic as the movie continues, whereas Parker, who survives for quite a while, gets more and more just, like, pissed that he clearly is a more emotional person. He was, like, he clearly was friends with Brett, and he's clearly, you know, maybe not friends with Dallas, but he's noticeably upset by all of these people dying. And then Ash is great because Ash is just a sociopath. Eventually it's revealed that he's a robot. Spoilers for the movie. But I think even Ash is really great because there's so many shots of everyone else being like, oh, shoot, there's an alien loose. And Ian Holm is clearly like, I'm loving the data I'm recording. Like, I think the first time I saw this, I kind of struggled to grasp that it was supposed to be a twist that he was a robot, because he had already been acting so, like, sketchy the whole movie. When they were like, oh my gosh, he's a robot? I was like, yeah, he kind of seemed like one. But again, that's just because the movie does such a great job of defining the character of these people that the twist doesn't really work, because I'm like, yeah, he's acted robotic. Like, that's that fits into what I know about him. But it's really, really good.
Yeah, I think that the scene with Dallas where he goes to Mother and has that little moment, it's honestly one of my favorites in the whole movie, because it just instantly, it really made me feel for him. Like, I was like, oh man, that's like the anxiety, as well as the resolve to then just keep on going and to do it anyway. It made me really like him as a character, really feel sympathy for him, and feel really sad when he ended up dying. Although, I will say that his death is one of the funniest in the movies, because it's supposed to be like a jump scare. Like, he's in the vents, and there's some pretty great tension building where they've got like motion trackers, basically, and they can see that the alien, the xenomorph, which is actually isn't called that in this movie, is nearby. And he doesn't know where it is, so he's looking around. And then he looks over, and it's there. And there's you just get this one shot. But the alien, like, raises its arms like it's about to give him a hug. I found it hard to take seriously. But aside from that, great stuff. And yeah, it's interesting, because I honestly couldn't remember whether or not I knew that Ash was a robot the first time I watched this. It was a long time ago, the first time that I saw this, so I can't really remember much of it at all.
Yeah.
Yes, I do think that special praise should be directed to Ian Holm for his performance, and it is very unsettling how interested he is in the xenomorph. It's really good stuff. So let's talk about the xenomorph, and we can kind of make this like a broad category of just the horror elements. This movie, I think, does something that, and I know that you're going to disagree with, that Jurassic Park also does really well, that it has, oh, shut up. It has an extended crescendo of buildup of like the tension and the stakes until we finally get to, I would say like about an hour or maybe 50 minutes or so of the true danger, when the xenomorph is loose and they basically know what they don't know what it is, but they basically know the threat that it poses and what they need to do in order to stop it. And I think that the crescendo is fantastic, partially because there's a lot of character work going on, and partially because kind of what you were talking about, in that there's a lot of world building going on, and not just about the company or like the world of Earth that they live in, but also like just this peeling back of the universe, basically, that they stumble upon this alien spacecraft. And I really like the scene where they first find the spaceship, and there's just so much about it that's not explained, and that eventually would be explained in less than stellar fashion. But I think that one of a sign of the strength of this movie's sense of awe and mystery is that, even knowing as I did what was going to happen and all of the frankly ridiculous explanations for what we're seeing, I was still tapped into like just what it must be like, or what it would be like, to find something so inexplicable, and to encounter something just so unknowable. Like, they have no idea why the ship is there. It quickly becomes clear that the xenomorph is not sentient, or at least doesn't seem to be. It basically, it is not the pilot of that thing. it somehow killed it. So yeah, I think that the crescendo is really good. I think that the tension is fantastic. And when it gets there, I think that it does so much with so little that you just have these little glimpses of the alien and you don't know what it is or what it's doing or what it wants. It's basically like there's a very exotic lion or something loose on the ship. And of course, a lot of the tension comes down to characters that you know and like being in danger. And of course, the xenomorph looks fantastic. Like, what an incredible design. I really can't say anything other than it just looks completely alien, despite the fact that it is humanoid in its shape, basically. Its basic shape. But yeah, there's some great shots of the xenomorph just like standing, not fully in shot, or shrouded in darkness, or hidden behind something. A lot of shots that put you in the character's shoes of not being able to fully see it, but seeing enough that you're like, whoa, this thing is weird, and it looks creepy, and it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. I think the xenomorph is also an example of, it could have been something where it was wearing too many hats, right? That the xenomorph has a lot of things going on. It can stab you with its tail, its blood is acid, it has a pointless second mouth that it uses to, like, stab you or something. But I think all of those really work, especially since each one of them is introduced, like, one at a time. That the xenomorph's alien blood is the foundation to one scene early on, where they're like, oh shoot, this thing is like burning through the hole and that might be a bit of a problem. And the first time that the alien kills someone as its full xenomorph form is when it reveals the second mouth. And I think it's just very effective at ramping up the tension every time, because you're like, this guy's got a whole grab bag of ways to kill people. What's he going to do next? He's got a gun elbow or something? He doesn't, thankfully. I think that would have been a bit beyond the pale. But yeah, and I agree with everything you said about the world building and the sense of, you know, when you encounter something completely foreign, how that's so impossible to try and survive in an environment that's designed to kill you, or an environment that contains a lot of things that are going to kill you, where you're just like, oh, I didn't realize that was a problem. I think you could have guessed that the gross egg thing was not a fantastic thing to, you know. But this begins a tried and true tradition of idiots putting their heads right above the egg when they clearly should not be doing that. But yeah, it's great. And I guess, you know, you disparaged my opinion on Jurassic Park. I don't want to relitigate this, but I do think that it's impressive to me that the alien doesn't appear until like 45 minutes to an hour into the movie, but it works because the movie is establishing character as well as world building and interesting world, that it's interesting to learn about, you know, what Earth is like in this, again, because the window we're getting is so realistic, because it is, you're trying to get a glimpse into what the world's like from listening to, right, truckers talk about their job, the things that are important to them. So I think it's really good. And yeah, I think the structure of the movie is really fantastic because it does so well establishing tone and character and operating for so long without a main character. And I think especially there's a bit near the end where I realized if you watch this on release, you really would assume that Ripley is about to die, because Ripley goes looking near the end. She goes looking for the cat, which is the same thing that Brett did before he got killed. And it's definitely shot in a way where if you didn't know Ripley was going to live because you've seen her in, you know, three other movies, it would be very, like, much a surprise that, oh, she just finds the cat and she's fine, and it's her partners who end up getting killed. So I thought that was neat, because I think a lot of horror movies kind of play their hand by the end, and you're like, obviously this person is the one who's going to survive. So I thought it was really impressive that the movie was designed in a way that really kept you guessing who the final person would be, especially since if you're going by horror movie rules, it's got to be a girl. And so they had a girl with both groups, so both groups could have conceivably survived.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I hadn't actually thought about that. But just to circle back real quick to the structure of the movie, I think that also the crescendo works on the lines of there's a very clear ramping up of tension throughout the whole thing, or ramping up of stakes, because clearly the face hugger is not good. Like, we all, anyone, even someone who knows nothing about this movie will know that when Kane gets face hugged, it's bad. The thing is that you don't know precisely why it's bad. So as the alien's life cycle becomes revealed, there's always this sense of not knowing, of like, okay, something bad has happened to Kane, but like, what and how is it going to manifest itself? And even when the little xenomorph bursts out of his chest, you're like, it can't be that simple. Like, it can't just be this little alien thing. Something more is clearly going on. So the unknown and the constant introduction of new, like, mechanics or new developments goes so far towards creating a constant buildup of tension. In addition to, yeah, just the character work that's going on, just like Jurassic Park. I do want to say something. No, I want to talk about a little bit about my one real negative about this movie. In addition to, Lambert is kind of a useless character.
Yeah.
And her death is ridiculous because the xenomorph is attacking Parker and she's just standing there. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? Run. And yeah, I know that's a classically horror movie thing to do, but I happen to think that that's a stupid thing that horror movies do. Characters showing no self-preservation. But anyway, I think that the xenomorph is a fantastic monster. And I think that it's really well designed, and it works perfectly in this situation. But I was like, what does the company think that it's going to get out of this thing? Just to continue with the Jurassic Park comparisons, it's like the plot point in Jurassic World that I hate, that Vincent D'Onofrio's character is trying to weaponize them. And I'm like, dude, what do you think is going to happen there? Like, the xenomorph, Ash says, like, oh, you can't kill the xenomorph. But we quickly learn in the next movie, they are exceedingly easy to kill. Like, you could just shoot them. It is just an animal. And shooting them at long range pretty much solves the acid blood thing. So that didn't really work for me. And it's not a huge deal. Like, it's not going to take that much off the score. But I was like, why does the company think that this is the perfect organism? It is basically just a wild animal. So A, I don't know how it's going to be weaponized, and B, even if you did, like, I don't know, domesticate it somehow, the enemy can just shoot it, and that'll be that. And also, Ash says, like, it's the perfect organism, untroubled by morality or conscience. A crocodile doesn't have a moral compass either. Why is that special? But I'm sure that you're going to say, oh, well, that doesn't matter, or that you didn't pick up on that.
No, I agree. I mean, that's a fairly ridiculous... I guess I kind of interpreted it as the company doesn't know a ton about the alien, and what Ash is saying is just based on his observing it in this movie. And so the company just knew there was, like, some goofy alien nonsense. So they wanted to see what was up with the alien nonsense. I didn't interpret it as, like, the company currently has full details of the xenomorph and knows everything it's capable of, and with knowledge of that, they're saying, hey, we want it to weaponize it. Because, yeah, I agree. I like Jurassic World. I'm not going to defend that aspect of Jurassic World, because that is stupid. It's like, dude, just use, like, a wolf or a lot. Like, what makes...
Well, just use guns and tanks and fighter jets.
Yeah. Although I guess in Alien Romulus, we discovered that they're able to reverse engineer the black goo from Prometheus and Alien Covenant using the xenomorph. So the xenomorph does contain, you know, stuff that is useful as a weapon. The xenomorph is not in of itself, and obviously they didn't know that. But anyway, I guess my negative would be, I agree that Lambert is a noticeably weaker character who... It's just much worse than the other characters. I do think there is some times where the movie drags. Maybe I'm just discovering through this podcast that I'm a child who needs, like, very consistent entertainment. But there's some times where it doesn't feel like the movie is world building, and it feels like the movie is just sitting on a shot of its great production design, which is great, but I don't necessarily need to see it for huge swaths of time. I don't love, and I can't think of any movie where I really love the double climax of the film, where there's kind of a fake out ending that Ripley thinks she's fine and she's escaped, and then she discovers that the xenomorph fell asleep on her escape pod, which is tough luck, especially since it looks as though the escape pod was designed explicitly to hide xenomorphs. Again, like, I swear, the piping looks the same as its tail. It's crazy.
That is true. And also, he looks really cozy in there.
He's having, like, a good time, yeah.
You could probably just leave it alone, and he'll just sleep for the entire trip.
I don't really love that, especially because I do like her final, like, mad dash to the escape pod. I think it's such a great setup that she triggers the self-destruct, and then she tries to untrigger it when she discovers the alien is in her way, and then she fails to untrigger it, so she has to make a desperate mad dash. I think that's really good. And then I think there's no reason in my opinion to not just put the xenomorph in her way in that section and have her kind of face off against it there, as opposed to putting it in the ship with her and having her have to, you know, blow it out the airlock and then give every alien protagonist that idea for the rest of eternity. So I do think that was one issue I kind of had with the structure of the film. But
sure, I noticed that. I wouldn't say it was a huge deal for me. But yeah, I can definitely see that. And yeah, you gotta start up the tradition of blowing aliens out of airlocks, or just sending them into space somehow. Well, I don't have a whole lot else to say if you are ready to do some rating.
Yeah, let's do it to it.
All right. Yeah, I think this movie's fantastic. Set design, art direction, characters, acting, it's all here. It's definitely a bit of a slower pace, probably, than what you may be used to. But if you like horror movies, and this one has passed you by, definitely give it a watch. Just a little bit of issues with here and there with world building, and with Lambert. No disrespect to the actress, she did fine. It's just the character's not really there. But those are very minor complaints. So I'm going to give this movie an A.
Wow. I think I'm in a pretty similar place. I've enjoyed it quite a bit for all the reasons we said. There's a couple of, small sort of issues that I have, but I'm going to give it an 8.4 out of 10. I think it's really good. I think it's better than I originally estimated it at. Speaking of, Elliot, yes, you have seen, not the Alien versus Predator movies, but you've seen the Alien movies, so why don't we hear a bit of a ranking here from you?
All right. Yeah, I watched all of the Alien movies over the winter break. And I'm going to say number one is Alien. Number two is Aliens. Number three, I'm going to have to give it to Alien Romulus. There were issues with that movie. And honestly, I think if we were to review it today, I would probably give it a different grade. But still, I think it was a strong entry. Number four, this is where it gets a little tricky because there's just this like little knot of mediocrity between this and the absolute rock bottom. I'm going to say Prometheus. There's a lot of discourse about Prometheus and Covenant, which is number five for me. I thought that they were all right. I didn't love or hate them. Honestly, the whole like the line about those movies being super pretentious, overly philosophical, I was really surprised by, because if anything, I felt like the movie's more introspective grand themes were underdeveloped. But that's a review for another time. So that's what, four and five? Yeah.
Yep.
So number six, that's going to be Alien 3. I did not like Alien 3. It's Fincher. It's not your fault. It was studio interference and everything. I understand that, but still not very good. And then at number, what, eight?
Yeah.
Actually, what, seven?
Yeah.
I'm going to put it at number eight. Just out of spite. That's going to be Alien Resurrection, because that movie's trash. I can't believe that movie kind of blows my mind how that was produced, how everyone at every stage was like, yeah, this is all right. This is potable. But yeah, that's my ranking. Nathan, what about yours?
I have the same top three as you. Alien, Aliens, Romulus. Then we separate a bit. I'm an Alien 3 defender. I think, especially divorced from the controversy about the beginning choices in the movie, which I don't want to spoil if you've never seen it, but if you have seen it, you probably know what I'm talking about. But I think divorced from the controversy surrounding that, I think it's a pretty strong entry that is, again, playing to the strengths of the Alien franchise, of compelling characters or characters that I find somewhat compelling dealing with a threat that is kind of beyond their ability to deal with. So I have Alien 3. Then I have Alien Covenant. Again, I think I mentioned in the Alien Romulus one that I will go to bat for Alien Covenant. I think it's, again, a good example of if you landed on an alien planet, it's going to be very difficult for you to survive because there's going to be some stuff there that's going to kill you. And then I put Alien vs. Predator. I have seen the first Alien vs. Predator. I think it's okay. It's clearly non-canonical because it features another version of Wayland, which is kind of funny to me. But it's okay. It's kind of a neat premise, I guess. Then I have Prometheus. I hate Prometheus. It's terrible. I agree with Elliot. The philosophical stuff is underdeveloped, and then everything else is also underdeveloped, so nothing's developed. And then if I could add more movies, I think it's unlikely they're ever gonna make an Alien movie again that's as bad as Alien Resurrection. It is laughably stupid. It wastes its one, like, it has one decent idea for a set piece where the xenomorphs are chasing them through a section of the ship that's gone underwater, so they're having to swim through it. It wastes the only good idea they have. It's a terrible movie. It just is, yeah, it's stupid. But that's my ranking. Anyway, if you want a good Alien movie, you can watch any of the ones in our top, you know, three or whatever. Or we can do some other recommendations here, Elliot. And I'm going to recommend a movie Elliot claims I've talked about before, which is likely because I think it deserves being talked about. But that's going to be Danny Boyle's Sunshine. This is a movie about a a future where the Earth's sun is dying, has kind of stopped giving off heat, so the Earth is freezing and everyone on Earth is dying, so it's set
on... That's a serious problem.
It is a very serious problem. But they have sent a manned ship to the sun to, with some sci-fi mumbo-jumbo that will kickstart its new, like, life and restart the sun, basically. This is, in my opinion, this is a really fantastic horror movie, as well as a really fantastic science fiction movie with a lot of really great, not necessarily philosophical, but like moral questions as the crew starts to face some difficulty in achieving their objective and having to make some choices of, you know, who are we willing to sacrifice from this crew that we know in order for this mission to succeed and humanity to continue. And it does the same thing that Alien does really well, which is it has really great characterization. It's also helped that this cast is stacked with people who would go on to be incredibly famous. I think Cillian Murphy's in it, Chris Evans is in it. I'm struggling to remember all the other people, but like almost everyone in this movie was someone I knew and had no idea was in it. So I think it's really good. I'm also a defender of the movie has a bit of a tone shift in the second half, which some people criticize. I think it's good because I think it makes some sense and kind of builds on stuff they've set up in the first half. But I think Sunshine, really good science fiction movie, really good horror movie. If you're looking for one, if you haven't seen it, I'd say watch it. If you have seen it, revisit it, because, you know, maybe you'll change your mind and agree with me.
Alrighty then. I have not seen that movie. Literally the only thing I know about that film, aside from what you've told me about it, is that it features an evil pepperoni monster.
Okay. No, it doesn't.
It looks like an evil pepperoni monster.
Not true.
Anyway, my recommendation is going to be something that you can see in the theater right now if you wanted to, and you should want to, because that is going to be Nosferatu. I chose this movie for a few reasons. One, I think that it's got a really good cast of likable, sympathetic characters. And two, and more importantly, I think that it also nails that the sense of the unknown and the unknowable. That's kind of what the gothic horror genre, which is a subgenre that I'm very fond of, is built on. Not like gore or violence or even monsters to a certain extent, just the idea of something unexplained and inexplicable just being encountered. And it's got that in spades. I've talked about this movie. It's one of my favorites of last year, so I don't need to go into too much detail. But yeah, give it a watch if you are into horror, if you liked Alien. And always remember that life is hard and full, chock full of disappointments.
Wow. I do agree, Nosferatu. It's worth seeing, especially in theaters, because it is a really, really good-looking movie. The one scene where he encounters the carriage to get to Dracula's Orlok's castle is fantastic. Like, that is an incredible shot. Also, big Bloodborne vibes. Time I see a guy wearing a top hat, Bloodborne vibes.
Well, I mean, a horse-drawn carriage coming to pick you up and there being no one in it.
It is literally something that happens in Bloodborne, as well as they take you to, like, a vampire castle in Bloodborne. Yeah. So it's... I don't know if it's, you know, I think it's probably a chicken and egg sort of thing, that Bloodborne's inspired by this. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Have you seen all the Alien movies? Do you have an Alien ranking? Send us an email. Let us know. You can also send us an email if you have a request for a movie that you would like to have reviewed or like to hear us talk about, or if you have a movie question, feel free to send us an email. We'll banter about it in the next episode.
Anyways, we're going to be back next week with another episode. We'll be reviewing a movie, talking about the movie news of the week. So be sure to tune into that. And thank you so much for listening. And have a great week.